And we are so pleased to welcome to the show NFL Network analyst and former NFL receiving great Sterling Sharpe. Sterling, how you doing?
I'm doing very good, Vic.
All right.
Very good.
Thank you for taking some time to join us. And it's really appropriate in this sense to have you as part of Cleveland Browns Daily because the guy who is president of the Browns is a guy named Mike Holmgren. And, somewhere along the line, you guys were together in Green
Bay. He sounds really familiar. Wait, is that Craig Stadler guy?
Yeah, there is a resemblance there, isn't there? I like that, yes. Craig Stadler. He still looks like him a little bit. But, okay, so you guys had some time together. So before we get into some league-wide topics, and you played for Mike Holmgren, what was Mike the coach like?
He was outstanding in putting players in a position to make the best play, not just any play, the best play. And I had had success as a receiver in the league before I got to Mike. But when I got Mike, I had the ability to win football games and end football games based on what I was able to do from the receiver position, which was remarkable. And he found different ways of putting me in positions to do what every player in the National Football League wants to do, and that's make plays. And the 3 years I played for Mike Holmgren and that staff in Green Bay were, and I can't say the best 3 years because I really enjoyed all 7 years of my time in Green Bay, but the 3 years that I played with him, I learned so much football, and I learned so much more on how to be not only a better player, but a better teammate, and how to stay in condition, how to understand offense, how to understand what defenses were trying to do to us. He did a great job of teaching us the game, and I think that's why under Mike Holmgren, the Green Bay Packers had so much success.
And here's the other thing, and Browns fans, I think, would appreciate the insights on this topic, Sterling. You saw Mike come in and rebuild and make great a team, take it from its point that it needed to be taken to what it became. And you were part of this whole thing, and he has a process and a vision. Okay, he's not the head coach with the Browns, but as president, he's brought his vision to Cleveland. And it's not the fastest, easiest process, to say the least. But and you know how fans will become impatient about it, understandably so. They want it now. But what advice or what sense can you give those who follow this program that you've seen work before?
The process, and I'm looking at the Cleveland Browns, and like I said, we had been successful, and I say successful. We had a 10-win season. We had a few guys make the Pro Bowl, but we couldn't quite get over the hump because player-wise, we just couldn't match up with not only the guys in our division, but we couldn't match up with guys in the league. And then all of a sudden, you know, we got really lucky. I mean, Brett Favre turned out to be Brett Favre. We got really lucky with that. But the biggest key, even bigger than Brett Favre coming to Green Bay, I think, early on in our career in Green Bay, was that Mike was able to get guys like Reggie White, guys like Sean Jones, to come over, to come to Green Bay and convince them that we could have success, we could win, and we could do all the things that they wanted to do on their other teams. We could accomplish that in Green Bay. I look at what the Cleveland Browns are doing right now, and they're a young football team, and you know what? I think the evaluation process is right on schedule. Hey, they're going to be competitive every week. They're going to go out. They're going to play some good football, but they're extremely young. You know, what he had in Green Bay was he had some players in place on defense. He had a few players offensive line-wise, offensively, and me at receiver that he could kind of build that foundation around. And, you know, once we got the pieces in place, I mean, the years after I left, the Green Bay Packers just took off because our foundation was very, very solid. And I think that's exactly what he's going to do in Cleveland. It's just a process that takes time. And eventually you're going to start to see the Cleveland Browns be more competitive in their division because the easiest way to the playoffs is to win your division. And that was the first thing that Mike preached to us because you can't get to the Super Bowl if you're not in the playoffs. And so I think the process that the Cleveland Browns are on, I think they're right on schedule.
John Gruden told me a story when he was an assistant coach with the Packers and was with your receiver group, and he basically said you guys were coaching him more than he was coaching you, but that's another story. But he said that you know, Mike was a stickler for a lot of things, and one of which was the splits and the different things that when he was harping on it, he harped on it, and he harped on Gruden to harp on it with you guys. And he said there was one instance in a game where you were off to the sideline and he was yelling at Gruden to tell you guys about something, and I don't know if it was the splits or whatever the situation was, but Gruden walked over, and Gruden really wasn't going to yell at you, but he kind of wanted you wanted Mike to see him, and he was just gesturing and mouthing as if he was yelling, but he really wasn't.
He wasn't saying anything to me. You know, and I used to, you know, because and Mike's system, outstanding system. And a lot of receivers, Jerry Rice probably comes to mind, had a lot of success in that system. So he had a vision of what the plays split-wise should look like. Okay. One of the things that I liked was I liked being on the line of scrimmage in the slot. You know, usually the slot receiver is off the ball and the outside X position is on the ball. I like being on the ball. So it took Mike some getting used to that. And he allowed me to get away with it. I would run plays and he would think like slants. He would think my split wasn't wide enough. And, you know, I was trying to explain to them is I don't want the DB knowing that I only got basically a two-goal, a straight go, or I got to come inside. I want to line up and make him play football for four quarters. So our relationship, I mean, I don't think Mike ever yelled at me.
Right.
I just think it was one of those things that we grew, that we grew a transformation of the offense he had in San Francisco to the offense we had in Green Bay. And I think that what Mike was teaching and what I was trying to, as a veteran receiver in the league, I think thought we meshed very, very well. And Mike always thought I was nuts from the way I would dress, from coming out in the cold and, you know, minus 10, minus 20. You know, I got no sleeves, I got my socks rolled down, and I'm ready to play football. He literally thought I was nuts. And I think that once I got, you know, I had a foot injury I had to have surgery on, and I could miss games and always be in the play. He always thought that was amazing. That there was, I know one year, my second year in the league, the last eight games of the week of the season, excuse me, I didn't practice, and I was still where I was supposed to be, and he always thought that was amazing. But I had a very good understanding listening to how he coached everyone else on what I was supposed to do and was able to help our offense be in the right place at the right time, which is why we had so much success, even though I didn't practice a whole lot. So we had a relationship, we had a verbal relationship that was based on tremendous respect for him as a coach and what I could do as a player, and it worked to perfection. And I think the Cleveland Browns fans are going to be excited. And I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised at this transformation that the Browns are going to make in the years to come.
NFL Network analyst and former NFL wide receiver great Sterling Sharpe joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Sterling, a couple of league-wide topics, but one is the league wanting referees to get involved in the concussion monitoring process to kind of make sure when a guy suffers something like that he's off the field or out of the game or whatever it is. It just seems like something that, I don't know, I'm wondering, is that something you want to put on the plate of a ref?
It's a tough situation to put a referee in. It's hard enough to officiate games, and now to have them have to identify a guy that got dinged a little bit and have him come out of the game. But I think the instance in which we saw a player that got dinged on the field, stumbled around on the field, and didn't come out of the huddle. I think in that situation, a referee can make the call that, you know what, for the player's safety, you may need to get this guy out of there. I think they can do that. I don't think they're going to be policing it like a doctor, so, you know, doing the eye test and the light in the eyes and the finger test, how many fingers am I holding up? I don't think they're going to ask him to do that. But I think in the one isolated instance that they may be familiar with where a guy got dinged in the game, stumbled around on the field, and ended up back in the huddle and then had a seizure on the plane ride away from the game, I think that's one of those situations that they can easily go up and say, hey, coach, you probably need to take this guy out for a play.
Okay. And the mere mention of this player's name can just be enough to set off a lot of controversy. Tim Tebow, but in the sense that everybody has got an opinion about this guy one way or the other. And in Denver, his struggles in his last game seem to be give the anti-Tebow folks pretty overwhelming evidence that he's not a guy who can help the Bronco football team. And there's even been some speculation that John Fox insisting on keeping him out there is to sort of show the rabid support for Tebow that the guy really isn't a player, which seems like an odd thing for a football team to ever do. I find that hard to fathom.
The Denver Broncos are a lot smarter than we're giving them credit for. I think they're putting Tim Tebow in a situation because they need to find out what direction they're going to have to go in at the end of the season as far as their quarterback is concerned. I think Kyle Lorton may have played his way out of Denver based on how he played early on in the season. You draft Tim Tebow in the first round. You got to find out right now if he's going to be a viable option for you to use in the years to come. And I think that when they go to, if they get to Brady Quinn, they're going to evaluate him the same way. I don't look at the Denver Broncos like I look at the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers or even the New York Jets and Mark Sanchez. I think they're playing Tim Tebow right now to find out what his strengths are, to find out what his weaknesses are, and to find out if he can be a viable option for this Bronco football team in the years to come as their quarterback. And if that's not the case, then in the offseason they're going to address that, I'm pretty sure. If he is the guy, then they're going to move accordingly. If he is not the guy, they're going to move accordingly. But they need to know, and the only way you're going to find out what Tim Tebow is in the National Football League is to play him. And I don't think they're throwing, you know, the lamb to wolves, and I don't think they're just putting him out there to so the Tebow supporters will keep coming to the game or to give us analysts something to talk about. I think they're truly evaluating what Tim Tebow does as a quarterback, and that's solely why he's playing.
And last thing, Sterling, the New York Jets, they got a huge, huge challenge this week, of course, going to Buffalo to face the Bills, who are playing surprisingly but extremely well. But this Jet team, which, again, a lot of pressure that Rex Ryan has put on them by all the predictions and the bold talk, et cetera, but still a team that has a lot, I think, to sort out. And this is going to be, I would think, a real moment of truth for them, perhaps, against the Bills.
I still think it's early. I mean, they have a winning record. What are they, 4-3, I believe, coming off their bye. And it's just an opportunity for them to see where they match up. The Bills are leading their division right now. The Jets know that, you know, if they want to get to the playoffs, the easiest way is to win their division. It's going to be a great divisional matchup. These two teams know each other very well. And the game is going to be as advertised. You know who the stars are. You know what they bring to the table. And I think when you look at the Jets, you know, everybody, you know, because they were in the AFC Championship game the last 2 years, you know, expectations are, well, now it's time for us to get over the hump and get to a Super Bowl. But, you know, the other teams in not only in the AFC, but in that division have that same aspiration and that same dream. They practice the same way and they do things very similar. I just think this is a Jet team that you get caught up in all the talk from, you know, and Rex Ryan does a great job of motivating his guys, but he doesn't play. You know, it's going to be decided on the field. And coming off their bye, we expect to see the best that we're going to see of the Jets this year. Coming off your bye, you want to springboard into the second half of your season. And I think what the Jets are doing, they want to run the ball a little bit better. I expect them to come out and try and lean on Buffalo a little bit more and run the football. Defensively, they want to get after Ryan Fitzpatrick and try and slow down what he's doing in the passing game, but their number one focus is going to be Fred Jackson. So they're a football team like all the others here in Week 9 that are going to evaluate where they are and what changes they need to make to put themselves in the best position that when the regular season is over, they're in the playoffs and have a chance to go to Indianapolis for the Super Bowl.
Well, Sterling, great, great, great stuff, and I am looking forward to the day, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, when I'm going to be able to go down the road from here to Canton, Ohio, and see you inducted in the hall. Join your brother Shannon there, because that's where you belong, my friend.
Vic, thank you very much for those kind words, and I said this, and I'm a firm believer in this. I had a great time being there with him. I had a great time going through that experience with him, and I said this to him and to the everybody who would listen when I was there, that if going into the Hall of Fame myself would exceed what I experienced and him going into the Hall of Fame, then I don't want to go, because that was the best experience of my life. Yeah. And I had a wonderful time playing in the National Football League. I enjoy talking about it, and if that happens, it'll be a great time, and I'll sit down, and you and I will do an interview and look back at this and laugh, and I was like, Vic, you must have a crystal ball, and you saw some things that a lot of other people didn't see, but it would be a great experience if that was to happen.
Well, I want it for you so bad, and it's deserved, and again, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you down the line.
You're very welcome, my friend.
Sterling Sharp from NFL Network, former NFL receiving great, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.